People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, we're going to be talking about Agatha Christie's Witness for the Prosecution, which is on at the Theatre on the Bay right through until the 10th of August. And a couple of weeks ago, you might have heard the interview I did with Alan Swerdlow, who directed that play. Well, it has a fairly large cast. There are about 12 people involved. And my guest today is one of them, who plays actually quite a pivotal role in the play, but we've decided there are going to be no giveaways. Sharon Spiegel Wagner, welcome to Fine Music Radio.
Hello, thank you for having
Great
me.
Great to see you. Let me just tell people about you a little bit. Don't get shy.
Okay, I'll try not to.
Sharon is proud to boast experience in multiple realms of the performance and creative arts, from humble beginnings in children's theatre. Sharon has gone from Shakespeare on stage and from comedy to horror on screen. She's done musical theatre, educational theatre, industrial theatre, and corporate theatre, and she's filmed TV commercials, TV series locally and abroad, and even featured in reality television. And she's been on international film sets and performed all over the world. She is an accomplished actress and singer who directs, writes original scripts. She's a voiceover artist and loves teaching drama and performance. And she's an award-winning and award-nominated actress. How was that, Sharon?
Well, that's great.
I was talking about you.
Oh, right, right. I try to zone out because it gets a bit, you know, I try to remain humble and all of that stuff.
One of the things that apparently is huge and successful before you start talking about the play is this thing called, is it Tully?
Tully Babes, yes.
Tully Babes.
Yes.
What is? Because that seems to be something of a hit.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. Well, it's so well written.
Is it Showmax?
It's, I think it was on Amazon, if I'm not mistaken. Or Showmax. Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. It was on Showmax. So she had three seasons. The first one was Tully Wedding Babies, and then she has a baby, and that's season two. And then she comes to Joburg, and that's season three, and I'm in that one.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And the lady we know from...
She's Suzelle DIY. She's Julia.
Right. Yes. Is she in it as well?
Yes, of course. She is Tully.
Oh, she is Tully.
She is Tully, okay.
Because I've seen some trailers and bits and pieces. And one of the things that look as though you're all having a huge amount of fun.
Too much fun. Remember, I told you before we started our interview, I said sometimes it's hard to call it work because when you have so much fun, some things just click into place and it just makes your job really easy. And we just had a blast. It's very
well. We were talking about that before you came in because you said how much fun rehearsing this play has been. Remember, no spoilers, but you also said when you started doing the read-throughs, you were, even at that stage, didn't quite know who did it and how much fun that was for all of you.
So we get our scripts, and Alan had to sort of edit it a little bit because it's a very long play.
And a huge cast.
Massive cast. And in London, or originally, it was done with, I think, maybe 16 or 20 people. I mean, so we've had to minimize a lot of the roles, a little bit smaller, and edit everything. And when we got our edited versions, we read our whole script, you know, by yourself. You come ready and prep for the rehearsal day, first rehearsal day. And we're all reading through this. And as we're reading through the script, we think, hang on, but whoa, hang on a second. And everyone's got their own theory on this could possibly this. And we know who it is, but we're still pointing at each other. It was you. No, you. And it was just, it was too much. It was so wonderful. It was like, it's fun.
I remember Alan saying what a lovely cast and what a good atmosphere there was when the rehearsals were taking place. That must make a huge difference to production.
I can't tell you, you know, you sort of wish when you got such a beautiful project like Witness or an Agatha Christie or any of these wonderful plays, you really pray that you walk into the first day at work and that you can already have a sense of understanding each other and being on the same page. And it was just magic. It was magic. The second we sat down, we all wanted the same thing. We all wanted this to be a big success. We all wanted to enjoy each other and bask in each other's skills and talents. And we're all so different. And my Witness family is incredible. Really. I said to them the other day, if they're listening, I hope they better be listening. But if they're listening, I said to them in our dressing room, I said, guys, if I could work with this company for the rest of my life, I would.
Good grief. That's saying something.
That's
Sharon.
A huge thing. It's huge.
And your role, just tell me about your role. I mean, I have seen it, so that's why I keep saying let's be careful of
spoilers. Absolutely.
And it was an absolute treat and a complete shock.
Thank you.
At the end, yeah. When you know.
Yes, when I do know. But you and me know. No one else knows. So I play Romaine Vol, which is the wife of the accused. Mm-hmm. And she is wonderful. She's your enigmatic femme fatale. She was originally in the movie. It was Marlene Dietrich who actually played the role.
Oh, really?
That yes, was, yes. I see. So it's a tough act to follow because mm-hmm. she's so glamorous and so she's so polished and beautiful in the film. And theatre is obviously a different beast, you know, to film. So it's difficult. I didn't want to be a carbon copy of that. Neither did Ellen want that.
No, I'm sure.
Because there's some things that she did, and every actress has to make her own version of it. Romaine is just has become for me a wonderful tool in the play to keep the mystery going.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also, as people find out a bit more about her, she's real. She's a real person. She could be a real person. It's so interesting is that you meet these characters. And they all look like characters in a book, you know, like Cole Mustard with a candlestick in the kitchen. You meet them and you see them as archetypes, but then the play is so well written, you start to break down and find out their humanity. And that's when you get hooked
yeah.
and you go, oh, no, or can he, or can she, or is it her, or is it him? And then it gets interesting, yeah.
It's such brilliant writing, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Agatha Christie's. I remember getting goose flesh at the end after it was all
yes.
over
yes.
and going out and sort of shaking my head and saying, she's incredible.
She's incredible.
The red herrings that abound
yeah.
and just also the beautiful English that she uses, oh, the vocabulary.
Just her characters are just so well formed. I mean, they're inside the actual writing and everything. Mm-hmm. They're there. They lend to the actor so much density that you can make a real person come alive on stage.
Agatha right?
does that.
Sorry.
Yes.
I'm right in saying that you are foreign in the play. Is
correct,
that right?
Correct. So this is what's so clever about Agatha is that she puts a foreigner in the middle of nowhere and that keeps that mystery going. Because we mm-hmm. all know that if you sit in a room with a bunch of people and you're suspecting anyone, surely it's the foreigner. And everyone's like asking questions. Could it be? Couldn't and she misleads you and she turns. But that's what's the beautiful thing about Romaine is that she can be the stranger in the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And as you get to see what's going on, you find out more that everyone's strangers. You don't know.
Yes,
everyone's
exactly.
a foreigner because you don't know.
And your character certainly had a mystique about her because obviously there were times when we suspected you.
Mm.
We might have been right for might all have. We know.
Yeah.
But there were times when we suspected you because of your... You seemed, it's quite a manipulative role,
totally.
Isn't it?
She's the femme fatale.
She's the femme fatale, exactly.
We had to use that because, in a sense, you can't, you know, women portrayed in these kinds of things, they have a power, and she's taken Romaine, Agatha, and she's made sure, and so has Ellen, to use that power in certain ways, you know, and she's in a man's world, she's in a foreign country, so she's going to use all the tools that she has, and she's that femme fatale. It's that intoxicating seductress that you don't know if she's telling a lie or the truth.
Yes,
it's
just it too was wonderful. Exactly that.
It is too wonderful. It's the best part to play.
I bet you. Oh, in the play, it must be the best part.
Oh, for me, I come off stage, everyone sees this, my fellow colleagues, they see me come off stage, and I go, oh, she's such fun. Every night I come off stage and I say it in the wings and it just falls out my mouth. I go, oh, she is so much fun. Because she is.
She is.
It's a wonderful
She's
part.
Fun from the audience oh. as well. So Sharon, let's see what you've chosen for us to listen to. What's your first piece?
So my first piece is the Clair de Lune.
And it's Debussy.
By Debussy, yeah. And it's just one of those pieces that keeps me calm. And I usually play it before I go on stage. Kind of like gives me some space. Makes me breathe.
Thank you.
Can just imagine that piece relaxing you, Sharon.
Totally.
Clair de Lune by Debussy, the first choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note, who is Sharon Spiegel Wagner, and she's in the show, the play, I should say, mm-hmm. Witness for the Prosecution, one of Agatha Christie's masterpieces that is on at the Theatre on the Bay right through till the 10th of August. In fact, you've had a long run because you were in Johannesburg for a month.
Very long, and when we got the contracts, we were sort of a little bit surprised because of after COVID and everything, everything's been such short runs, you know, because people are scared to go out. This is a very long run. It's 5 weeks in Joburg, 5 weeks in Cape Town. It's a long one, so we were all very happy, employed for a little bit longer.
So have you been as enthusiastic all through this run, as you said just before the music?
Every single night. You can't not get excited with the people that you work with the material that you work with, and it's your job. It's mm-hmm. your job. You've got to be enthusiastic, you know. Sometimes if you have a bad day, you've got to sort of shrug it off and everything. But I'm giving a gift to the audience. We're giving a gift, and I want to give that gift. I get the privilege of giving that gift.
That's a lovely way of putting it.
So it really is. It is. It does feel like that because an actor's life is on and off. So
I know.
When it's on, it must be on.
In a big way.
Yes.
When you move theatres like you do, I know Monte Cassino is very different from Theatre on the
very.
Bay. For the first instance, the stage is much smaller, isn't it?
Much.
Theatre on the Bay.
It almost feels half the size, even though it's not.
Oh, okay.
But it feels half the size.
Did that make any difference?
Massive difference.
But not negatively so, I hope.
Not at all, no. In fact, I mean, for me, each act is different. Mm-hmm. But in fact, for me, it's a more intimate space when it's a bit smaller. So the performance doesn't have to be as large, and it doesn't feel like you have to, you know, reach projection that hard. So for me, I enjoyed it a bit more. Also, the space at the Theatre on the Bay is just it's so well built that the acoustic is just a bit easier to sort of ride that projection, that
yes.
wave.
Now you hear very
you
clearly,
hear beautifully.
You? And you need to in an Agatha Christie
absolutely.
Play.
Absolutely. So with Monty, you got to push a little harder, uh-huh. but it is a bigger stage, and it is a bigger yes. audience. So you get it's different, but it's the size. It's much easier for me. Everyone's different, but it's much easier to go smaller than it is to go bigger.
Oh,
so
yes.
coming from a bigger place to a smaller one is easier because you can relax a little in the smaller one. It's a bit more intimate. Mm-hmm. You can almost tell a little bit more of a secret in a smaller space.
Oh, that's true, yes. Mm. And did you have, Alan says you had a really good crowd in Johannesburg.
Wonderful.
And he made an interesting observation that there were lots of young people in the audience.
Yes, which was wonderful because that's the new generation.
Well, exactly.
We've got to get them to put down the screens and stop watching Netflix all the time, even though I do it as well. But come out and see live theater, because I actually saw Ashton Kutcher say something really interesting about AI. Because now all actors are very scared that they're going to be replaced with artificial intelligence. But he said that because it's going so well, people are actually going to crave real live performance, because they're going to go, this is great, but I want to see the real thing. I want to see. So suddenly it's becoming more of a luxury to see it live, as opposed to the easy, just, you know, just making a computer do it.
Absolutely. And the cast that you're working with, some of them do double roles. Are you doing that at all?
No. So each of the actors get a lucky double. They get to play other characters. But I won't say exactly what I get up to on stage.
No, don't. You mustn't give anything away.
No.
And I know where you're heading.
Yeah.
So. But there's, for example, there's the woman who was the housekeeper.
Correct.
Who has quite a kind of chilling presence. And then from, you sort of believe every word she says.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, she seems as
very
though she
suspicious.
Might be, yes, suspicious and a bit of a loony.
Mm. So my kids say she's sus.
Have your kids seen it?
Well, my eldest has seen it because my little one won't really understand. But my eldest has seen it and she goes, he's sus. She's sus.
Oh, really?
They don't say suspicious. They just say sus.
Sus. What age is your eldest?
She's 11.
Oh, and she enjoyed
loved it. Loved
did she it. Guess who did it?
She guessed every single guess that we could have. And then in the end, she said, I knew it. Just like everybody. You know?
Just like everybody. We were, you know, that word that I don't really like called gobsmacked.
Yes.
We were, when we came out for the drinks, I thought, no.
Yeah.
And that's why I spoke about the goose flesh
thing.
Yes,
yes.
And also, Alan did say that he had added little bits and pieces as more red herrings than were already there.
Absolutely. I think to make Agatha Christie, to every single playwright or director nowadays, you have to make it accessible today. Mm-hmm. So you have to add a few things of your own touch to just make it more now, because they can't stay stuck on the page and they can't stay stuck in the past. These kinds of stories are good enough to update them and make them a bit more timeless so that everybody can enjoy it, so that a young person can enjoy it, so that anybody can. It's wonderful.
And I mean, what can be more riveting than a courtroom drama?
100%.
And the courtroom drama, by its very nature, has people in wigs and cokes and
everything.
Things. So
it has a whole ritual behind it.
It has a ritual, yes.
It's wonderful. I have to tell you, being on stage between Mike Huff, Graham Hopkins and Peter Terry behind me, I mean, I am in the ring with the best gladiators of them all.
Yeah.
So it just feels, I mean, that electricity, it's enough to make anybody excited, to make my job easy.
Gosh, and you it's becoming more and more apparent that you're enjoying it so much.
Too much.
I just do want to talk about some of the other things, because I read that whole thing that you do, including we spoke about the thing you're doing for Showmax.
Yes, Tully's Joburg Diary.
And is that, do you know if that's getting good response?
Listen, I mean, Tully, that actual, the whole, all of Tully's diaries have gotten award nominations and awards out of left, right and center. It's been called the best comedy, South African comedy series here, and which is wonderful. And it contests with stuff overseas and everything. It's well shot. It's well written. It's just, it's well cast.
Is it still on?
It is still on. It's on Showmax. You can watch the first season, the second season, and the third season. And what Julia's done is she's created characters that are just perfect. She just does them so well. You see exactly who they are. She's a brilliant actress, and it's wonderful to work with her.
Is that the one who
that's
did
Tully,
the DIY?
Yeah. That's Suzelle, yes.
Oh, right.
She's brilliant, and they've just done a movie now as well, and I'm so jealous whenever I see her on screen, and I just go, oh, man, come on, me too. She's brilliant. I'm very proud of her.
How do you enjoy working on screen, behind a camera?
That's such an interesting question, because it is really different. There's a different type of intensity. You know, with camera, you've got about a minute or two of really intense work, but the rest is set up and thinking and preparing. With theatre, it's endurance. You have to be much longer in the moment because you have to stay in it for a long time. You don't get to cut and do it again. So you really have to, you know, put your seatbelt on for the ride. But there's something thrilling about that action and getting that shot and canning a good shot. They're both equally just wonderful for me.
It's always fascinated me how in films, if you are playing, for example, a really traumatic role, that you have to keep stopping and starting, which can so often, you've got yourself into this rage or whatever it is, or even comedy, then you've got to stop and somehow get straight back into it. That must be tricky.
It is tricky, but it's up to the actor to say to his director, I need one long take, or please don't interrupt me, let me keep running or rolling. And you have that relationship with directors, and they acknowledge it. They go, well, she's not the kind of person that'll stop every 7 seconds, so we've got to do one long, and then we can decide what we want to do. So, so you make that, you know yourself, what you can do as an actor, and you make it clear. And the clearer you are about what you can offer, the clearer the director knows how to handle it and what to get the best out of you. So with
also
experience.
The stage director does the same in a sense, doesn't he?
Absolutely.
He might allow you to make a suggestion. Alan, can I do it this way rather?
I have had the privilege of working with some of the best directors, Alan being one of them, and he allows you to play. And he says, "And can I try this?" And he goes, "Of course you can." And if he, what's so great about Alan, if he doesn't like it, he goes, "No." And there's no discussion. And that's what's nice, because you don't want a director to also go, maybe. You want choices. You want to know what is right or wrong in his vision. Otherwise, there's no boundaries, and then it can get a bit muddy. Mm-hmm. So what's so great about Alan is that he play, and he says, this no, this yes, this. And I like that, because I trust him. Because then I can go, well, he's directed me. I love being directed. There's some actors that love doing their own thing, which is also great. But for me, I love the relationship with the director. I need a director,
Well, we're going to have another choice now. Yay. Another music choice, Sharon Spiegel-Wagner, who's my guest.
Hello.
What is the next one?
So you're all going to laugh at me, but this is called Do What I Say, and I chose it because my kid said to me one day, "Mommy, play this," and I thought it was very funny and silly.
Fair enough. Now, my guest, Sharon, says that that's a really silly song. Mm. What was it?
It's called Do What I Say. And it's basically my kid going, "You listen to me now, Mommy."
And you said they requested it.
They requested.
Good heavens. So your children are, because you're based in Johannesburg.
I'm based in Joburg, yeah.
And so they came down with you for the run?
For the July holidays. So my hubby said, "Okay, we'll come and stay with you while they're on holiday." So he's working at the moment and they're with me, yeah. He works in the day, and I'm nocturnal. I work at night.
Okay. So he can look after them
absolutely,
at night when you're away
on
stage.
Yes, on stage.
Right.
Well, that was the deal when we got married. I said, "Okay, you need to know what you're getting yourself into."
And he's obviously happy.
Yes.
My guest, by the way, is Sharon Spiegel-Wagner, who's playing an Agatha Christie's witness for the prosecution. She's the glamorous one, and she's... Her photograph is the one on all the posters.
I'm the poster girl.
You're the poster girl.
I never expected that, I promise.
You know what? I wanted to ask you, you seem so passionate about theatre and all this that you do, and I read this whole list of your many achievements.
Yeah.
But where did it all come from? Do you come from a theatrical background, or how did you get the bite of the theatre, the bug.
I must be honest with you. I don't have a theatrical background at all. I just think it was a way for me to express myself. We were arty and creative as a family, but not to this extent. None of us are actors. I mean, none. My mom's not, and my dad, my sisters aren't. And even before that. But it's just one of those things that I was good at. And then, you know, when you get praised for it or you get liked for it, when you're a kid, you just want to do more of it because some kids are sports kids, some kids are theater kids. And the passion, I think, was when one day I just realized that that's where I feel most alive. Mm-hmm. That's where time doesn't factor. You know when you're bored, when you're looking at your watch all
yes,
the time?
Yes.
When I was doing drama or singing a song or dancing, I never looked at the time. So it just made sense to me, yeah.
Because, as you say, you sing and dance.
Correct.
You're what they call a triple threat.
Well, I'm not that good at dancing anymore, unfortunately. my dancing feet are a little rusty. But, yeah, in this day and age, an actor has to be able to do stunts and, you know, all that kind of – it's not enough just to stand with the spoken word. Mm-hmm. There's a lot you need to offer so that you can have longevity in life and actually make a living. You've got to do it all. You've got to do a lot.
I remember seeing you – in a few things, including unusually and unexpectedly in the Rocky Horror Show, where you were Janet, weren't you? In Peter Tureen's production. Yeah.
It was The Few Gods, actually, but it was at Peter's Theatre in Joburg, yeah. I took over from Jenny Stead because she was the Cape Town Janet and I was the Joburg Janet.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, wonderful actress. And also, my Rocky family was wonderful. I was very lucky as well. Mm-hmm. They were just wonderful. That was too much fun as well.
It must be horrible when it ends.
Awful.
And you say goodbye for the last time. And you all go back to your homes.
Well, it's not the last time because we see each other on other projects and see how we grow. And you make your connections and your links with people. And it's interesting because when you're an actor, you're fully engrossed in that project. So that's your life. And then when you come out of it, you're in real life. You know, I still have to park a car and I still have to pay my bills, right?
Right.
So those two you go back to your life. You go back to the things that we need to do, the practical sides of it. And then you return to the creative space, sometimes with old family friends and sometimes with new ones.
When you are together on a cast like this with a fairly long run, does the cast ever get together for dinners or lunches?
All the time.
Oh, really?
And at times it's just like, guys, I'm all peopled out, get away from me. And everybody goes to their room and they close the door and bye-bye. But we enjoy being with each other. We often start a conversation before the show starts and then we finish it off when the show's finished. So where were we? Oh, yes. And then we carry on the conversation.
Oh, yes.
It's too much fun, yeah.
Gosh, it sounds wonderful. And let's just consider some of the things you've done, apart from the Rocky Horror Show, the Dead Tinder Society.
Oh, I love that one as well.
Love Lost, What I Wore. Hairspray, you've been in.
Oh, I loved Hairspray as well.
Oh, I
love them all.
In love with the theatre, aren't you?
I love them all. You get very attached, obviously, to some projects more than others, but I think back on them and I just think, oh, my God, I was under that light and was on that stage and I got to do what I love. That's really wonderful.
And do your parents fully support what you've chosen
fully,
as your career?
They were obviously concerned about it because it doesn't always work for everybody. It's a very hard profession. It's funny, I've got my two girls here.
Yes.
And I don't necessarily encourage them to take a life of the arts because what comes with it is a ton of struggle, you know. So it's an adrenaline rush and you're always on the roller coaster, but
and
it's
then
hard.
Something like COVID comes along.
Exactly.
And
it's very difficult.
Such damage.
Yes. It is. It's not an easy job, no.
And this, at the beginning I spoke about you performing Shakespeare. Is that also something you've enjoyed? Because that's one of the great disciplines, isn't it?
So that's rough. I'm not going to lie. That's rough because I'm such a purist. I just believe that Shakespeare has to be – I'm scared of it. I have to believe that it has to be perfect. And it's really hard to engage. I mean, I'd love to do another Shakespeare, but it terrifies me. It really does because I believe that that's a certain skill. Mm-hmm. It's a type of skill. It's like asking a singer to do rap. It's a type of thing that I really believe that you got to get right. So it's not a thing I'm rushing to do because I want to respect it. It needs to be right.
That's
really
a very interesting approach, actually, and a sensible, I think, approach to Shakespeare.
Shakespeare's a lot of words, and it's a different technique completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason why in London there's a Royal Shakespeare Company that just deals with Shakespeare. It's hard. It's an artistic expression that needs work and skill. I must respect it.
When you spoke about being a perfectionist, does that also include the production? In other words, you might not be mad about an ultra-modern production of Shakespeare.
So that's, yeah, it's such a tricky question, because I do want everything to be accessible for today.
Yeah,
I do want things to update themselves. But at the same time, if we lose that purity, if we lose the core of where it began, where's it heading? We're gonna destroy it. I don't know. It's so hard. I can say yes and no at the same time. I think that's my best bet. I love modern productions, but I really think there must be something essentially pure about it. Must be.
And the singing parts of your career, Sharon?
Listen, I must tell you, I've been now mostly in television and film and theater that's just been talking, and I miss singing terribly. So I really hope that there's a musical in there coming up. But I miss singing, yeah. I love it.
You sang in the Rocky Horror Show.
I did.
And any of these other shows that you've done?
Yes, I did. We did the Marvin Hamlish story. I did it with Jonathan Rocksmith, and it was gorgeous.
I got to sing
so many beautiful songs.
Fiddler on the Roof?
Fiddler on the Roof was my first big production. I miss singing. Singing has it's another art, because it's not really as real as you would, because no one breaks into song. I mean, I will, but I'm considered a bit eccentric. But no one really in real life breaks into song. So it's another art form as well that needs its own sort of place and respect for it. And it's an escapist kind of, it's wonderful as well.
Let's have another choice of music,
yes.
Sharon. What have you got for us this time?
So this is by Lana Del Rey, and it's called Young and Beautiful. And it's just a great song.
It's a song about yourself.
I wish.
I've seen the world, done it all, had my cake now. I am immense, brilliant, and brilliant now. Hot summer nights, mid July, when you and I were forever wild. The crazy days, city lights, the way you'd play with me like a child. Will you still love me when I'm no longer young and beautiful? Will you still love me when I got nothing but my aching soul? I know you will, I know you will, I know that you will. Will you still love me when I'm
Lana Del Rey and that piece, Young and Beautiful, is that right?
Yes.
Sharon Spiegel. No, I mustn't Spiegel. Say Spiegel, it's Spiegel. Yes. But you say some people get it wrong, you've even been called Spielberg.
I get
Spielberg.
So many. I get Spiegel, Spielman, Spielberg. I get Smeagol.
Where does the name come from?
It's a German name. It's yes. actually it's actually the name for mirror, which is Spiegel.
Spiegel,
yeah,
yes.
And that's why people that's right. say yes. So.
Sharon Spiegel Wagner is my that's guest. It. And Sharon
yes.
plays a really quite important role in Agatha Christie's Witness for the Prosecution. Mm. And by that, I certainly don't mean that she is the one who did it.
No.
She might be. But you
who
decide
knows?
When you're sitting watching it. So that's what we're talking about. But also, we're speaking about you and your love of singing just now and all the stuff you've done. And what about writing? I see you write as well a bit and direct.
Yes, yes. So like I said to you, we have to be diverse in what we do. And a lot of the – and during COVID actually is when writing really took
– I believe so. So
yes.
many people said that.
So many people started writing because what else are we going to do? We need to express ourselves. We're not painters or artists. I'm sure many artists found their voice as well during COVID. And we sat down and I sat down and I wrote and I just decided to write about me, about the situation, about everything, which is what artists do. I pulled in a very wonderful colleague, friend of mine, Laurie Strauss. And we actually opened a show called Locked Upside Down at the Theatre on the Square in Johannesburg. And it was about two moms being stuck in COVID.
Oh, and so it was actually produced and
yes,
played out.
No, it manifested itself. Alan directed us and he read it and he thought, this is fun. And then we played and we workshopped a little bit more. And it really did very, very well. And it was the situation as it was. We were locked inside with our
so
kids.
Many people could relate to you.
Absolutely. And people, it's funny because I closed a show at Theatre on the Square when COVID started and opened a show at Theatre on the Square when it opened. And it was about COVID and I loved it and I enjoyed that writing experience and I got more confident at it. So now I'm writing.
Are you still
absolutely
writing? It wasn't a one-off.
Definitely not. I'm addicted now to it because when you see you can, it's like it's like someone running a race. When they see they can, how much faster can I do it? So you want to try different things. So now I'm writing.
Can we expect anything in the near future?
I really hope so, but I've got to keep it quiet.
Okay, no,
yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah.
But you also had projects with children and children's theatre
long ago.
So obviously you enjoyed that as well.
You won't believe it.
Because that must be a different world.
Oh, it's so different. That I don't look on with such fond memories.
I'm sure children can be difficult.
They are a very tough crowd. The kids won't make you feel good. If they don't like it, they just won't like it. They won't go, oh, well done. No, they don't care. But I was actually entertaining kids at birthday parties. That's where really I did it all. I really paid my dues. I was a fairy princess. I came with a big dinosaur. And we entertained kids at parties and we did a little shows. And that's how I sort of made some money and proved to my dad and my mom that I can do this, even if I'm struggling, I can do it. Yeah.
And that's where the directing thing came in as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I wrote songs for kids and we actually took out a little book. This was for our community in Joburg. And it just, that sort of kept me going while I was studying and while I was finding my feet. And
now that you are so established forms in the theatre, do you have your own company or do you work completely freelance?
So at the moment, because of my company and my kids, I'm the boss of my kids.
Ah, yes.
So I can't take that on at the moment. I'd rather, and people have asked me, do you want to produce or whatever? But we've got such great producers. We've got Peter, we've got Showtime, amazing producers that are, I'm not ready yet. Mm-hmm. But hopefully one day I'd like to start something and create my own work,
To go right back to the beginning, when you were obviously auditioning for this role that you're doing. Mm. You were called by somebody and said, come and audition.
Yes.
And then?
And then.
Did you read it first?
I've read it. I watched the movie. I did some research.
Oh, you watched the movie as well?
I did want to. I just wanted some kind of reference. I always watch things with a pinch of salt because I don't want to mimic or take
as you
from
said
that.
Earlier.
Yes, I don't want to be a photocopy. So I watched just for some reference and understanding the style or a possible style that was well known. And I read it. And then I walked in and I just chatted with Alan and I sort of gave him a take. And then he said, okay, yeah, and bye.
Really, it's quick.
Bye.
And you thought, oh.
And then I thought, okay. And then he phoned me and said, let's. You must do this. You're going to do this.
How, did he invite you in the first place? Did he say, Sharon,
he had
we're
me
looking
in mind.
For this role?
I think he had me in mind, and okay. so did Peter. Peter's really trusted me. I've always been there. I've always been, you know, I've always done my absolute best work, and he knows how passionate I am and how serious I am about it. It's not a game for me. I come to work, I'm usually one of the earliest ones. So I just, it's really important that I do a good job. And you build a reputation. That's what you have to do in this industry. In most industries, relationships are currency. So I needed value in that. You have to add value to those.
Mm-hmm. So then he gave you the news, yes, and
yes.
you jumped up and down.
Oh, jeepers, did I jump up and down.
And then what? Then the
and
next
then I was terrified. And then I was scared. So what people don't know is that when the actress gets the part, sometimes she goes, yay, and then, oh, my God, can I actually do this? Will it be okay? Will I be good enough? Can I? And then all the insecurities pile on top of you. And, and then I got scared because then I thought, now I've got this responsibility. It's not just an offer, and I actually have to be there, and I have to be at my best. It's very scary. And for me, if I'm not scared after taking a role, that worries me. I do need that sense of responsibility and obligation and that sense of discipline to go, right, that's all the fun stuff. Now let's get down to it. You got to learn your lines. You got to know what you're doing. You got to be there for this person and that person, all that.
Is learning lines fairly easy for you?
Very, yeah.
Oh, really? Lucky you.
It gets, yeah, it becomes part of you.
Yeah,
it's like
sure.
It's like doctors. I'm always amazed that they diagnose you, they take out their scripts, they know exactly what to give you. It's like they've memorized all the medicine in the world. It's the same thing with actors.
That's an interesting analogy.
Yes, you just get into it. You just know what you know. It becomes you, internalizes.
We're going to take another piece of music now.
Yay.
And what is your next piece?
Oh, I do love this artist. It's I Don't Want to Wait by Paula Cole.
So open up your morning light and say a little prayer for I. You know that if we are to stay alive, then see the peace in every eye.
Wait by Paula Cole.
That's right.
Paula Cole. And another choice of my guest, Sharon Spiegel-Wagner here, who, well, we're approaching the end of the program, Sharon,
yeah, sadly.
Unfortunately, because I'm enjoying chatting to you, and I so enjoyed the play. Mm. As I said, it was goose flesh stuff at the end. There's no way that I would have guessed the end.
No, nobody does.
So that's something to go and see. It's on until the 10th of August. At the end of The Mousetrap,
yes,
someone comes out, don't they, and say, you're not allowed to tell anybody who
yes.
did it. I almost feel this play should do
should,
that.
Oh, that's so clever.
Because
I didn't think of that.
Because it's such a surprise at the end. And if you do give it away, you know, then you lost.
Well, it's no fun. I was telling you before, it's like playing Cluedo and knowing who did it. And why would you play the game?
Yes.
The whole fun is to speculate.
Right. Yeah. I was asking you also just before the music started about learning lines,
yes,
and just relating that to what you said about Shakespeare,
yes,
learning that sort of language and those sort of lines must be rather tricky.
That is scary for me because I think it's a different way of expressing yourself. So for me, Shakespeare, I always have to find the sense first before I learn the line. But with just plays as they are, the sense is there, so it's not so hard to learn the sense. It's a different beast, yeah.
And then just a final thought on audiences.
Yes.
They can affect, or do they not, in a play like this, the evening?
Totally. So I have to tell you.
Because there are some laughs in this play.
Oh, my word. So actually, that's such a great thing that you asked me, because in Joburg, we had one night where there was one man who was so into it. At the top of his voice, he said, oh, no, oh, who is that? And we were nearly laughing on stage because how do you ignore that? And the audience laughed at him, not at us. So it became such a communal experience for all of us. That is very hard to do. And I find some of the more serious moments, people are actually laughing. Not because it's funny, because it's unexpected. And that's funny. The comedy is, the definition of it is something that's unexpected. So you laugh. And some of us actors, I mean, the Leonard Vole that's played by Brett Kruger, a newbie to theater, and he's absolutely wonderful. And he does the part so beautifully, and I adore him. Says to me a lot, he gets a little upset. Like, why are they laughing at us? And I go, yeah. And I also get upset. And it's not about that. It's just the experience and how many things are happening on stage and how you didn't see it coming that makes you laugh. It's the diffuse of tension.
And it's not sort of falling about laughing. They're little touches that you smile
giggles.
At. Here, giggles.
Total
it's
giggles.
It's not guffaw.
Yeah. In fact, when there's total silence, it's not so much fun.
No,
and then we get scared. You know, we sort of think, well, why aren't you laughing? Why aren't you saying anything?
Yeah.
But I do love the gasps. I do. And
yes.
Some of the red herrings and things, yeah.
Gosh,
yeah.
When people go and see it. I know some colleagues of mine have been invited by Peter Turin to go and see it. So
yes.
I'm dying to hear their...
Oh, it's just the best. I love that reaction.
You sort of almost want to say something to egg them on, but you can't.
No.
You just must not say a word.
Everyone must enjoy the experience as their own. You know, always a group of people. Often, you know, you see a couple together and they're snuggling up together and then one's leaning forward and one's... because this is not a terrible spoiler, but the audience is part of our jury. So we get to see them and look at
them. That's true. Actually, that's a technique that I thought was very clever.
Yes.
So the prosecutors and the witness for the...
We're breaking the fourth wall and we're looking
exactly
at you.
Exactly, breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, and you're part of this.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That invites them to have those reactions in the courtroom. And I think for audiences, it's quite fun.
It is fun.
Yeah.
You feel curiously involved in
exactly.
an unexpected way.
It's wonderful.
We're going to have to leave it there, Sharon.
Yeah.
And we haven't given anything away.
No,
we can be very proud of ourselves.
Not at all.
So thank you very much and best of luck
thank
in the run.
Thank you for having me. And please come see it and just enjoy our beautiful talent.
You know what I thought? If I've just said if you know what's happening, then it's just ruined it for you.
Sure.
But if you don't and you've seen it once, I'm quite tempted to come and see it again. And while I'm there, try and pick up things that I should have or might have.
That's what I love
about
it.
That?
That's Agatha.
That's Agatha.
That's Aggie.
I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, me too.
Huge fan. Have you read her book called The Murder of Roger Ackroyd?
No. Okay, that's my next on my list. Thank you.
Because it's the most extraordinary
Roger Ackroyd, definitely.
I have ever come across. And
okay.
It was a very early book of hers as
lovely.
Well.
Okay.
Your homework.
Thank you.
Sharon Spiegel-Wagner, what's your last piece of music?
Is Viva la Vida by Coldplay.
Thank you, and thank all you. The very best.
Thank you so much.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.